Senator, one of the reasons I'm down here is to increase the incidence of adoption. We've got tremendous barriers and hurdles that potential parents have to overcome in order to adopt children through the Division of Family Services. If you would like to work together with me to introduce a new tax credit that would subsidize or incent all Missouri parents to go into the Division of Family Service and adopt children, and you want to create a tax incentive to do that, regardless of the race of the child or the race of the parents, I'm with you. I'll work with you. We don't have that today. We have a tax credit inside of a disabled tax credit. We create an incentive to adopt a child based on their race. And I think, you know, in my example, if I'm choosing, where are we to incent a parent to choose a child based on their race? And that's my fundamental feeling on this issue. If we actually sat down and looked how much money the state saves when parents adopt children in the Division of Family Services, it's a lot more than, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars,
right?
Potentially. But right now we don't have a tax credit to incent Missourians to adopt. We have a tax credit to incent Missourians to adopt very difficult to place children, disabled children, sibling groups, mentally disabled children, and to adopt children simply because of their race.
Right, but you don't agree that many kids of minority descent are considered difficult to adopt?
No, I think that it's difficult. The barriers that we place in front of parents is children are not difficult to adopt solely because of their race.
I understand that
right.
notion. but I do know that there's a much larger percentage of those that are minority kids, specifically African Americans as well, that happen to be under state custody that are much harder to adopt than kids of the majority community. I mean, that's a fact. I mean, I don't have a problem with there being given some incentive.
I would suggest that that's a symptom to the process, that the fact that not enough parents can navigate what's required in order to become eligible to adopt through the Division of Family Services.
So, but there are families that wait on white babies, that wait on them because they're not available. And then you have all of these other students, kids that happen to be in the orphanages or are under state care, that happen to be there to adopt. They're just not the ones that are the preferable ones to adopt.
Well, that may be. I'm hopeful that we're in a world soon, if not in that world today, where a potential adoptive parent sees beyond race and sees to the need that's in front of them. And what you're alluding to is private adoption. That's true, that when a white couple wants to adopt a white child, they will line up to adopt a white child in a private adoption. But when you go to the Division of Family Services, there are children of all races. And what I see is the burden to parents adopting those children is not the race of the child, it's the process they have to navigate such that they then become able to adopt that child.
I think that's partially true, which is why I support your other legislation that, of course, prevents that barrier from other families that are wanting to adopt kids of minority descent to make that easier, to make a process that's
right.
easier
it's
for them.
Right. So the courts wouldn't restrict or slow down the adoption because of race.
Right. I agree. I agree fully with that. I do fundamentally have a problem, with this as it stands. If that's something you'd like to discuss offhand, I'm not sure whether you're willing to amend it at this point or whether that's the portion of this amendment that happens to be the most important or whether it happened to be the portion that just disallowed race from being considered special needs. So for me, those were two different things. Race being solely considered special need as opposed to those folks not being provided incentive or credits for adopting those that are least adopted.
I think there's two things. One, I think I'm insulted by the fact that race is in a special needs adoption tax credit. You know, I'm the father of a biracial family.
Understand.
And so I'm insulted by the fact that someone would even put that in a bill called special needs adoption tax credit. Secondly, if we're going to overcome and move together as a society, it's when we can see into the hearts and minds of people and not make decisions based upon the race of those people. What this has done is it has put a scenario, and there are plenty of white kids in the Division of Family Services that go unadopted. And so what it says to that child is, here come some parents, and the state of Missouri is going to give $10,000 to those parents to adopt an African-American child, but they're not going to give that $10,000 to adopt you. So I will admit, and it is a fact, that the majority of children in DFS are of ethnic minority, primarily African-American, but there are just as many white children in that system. There are lots and lots of white children in that system who we as a state are saying, look, it's $10,000 to the family to adopt that child. We're not going to send this family coming in the door to adopt you. So look, I think I can make a very strong case why there should be an adoption tax credit for Missouri citizens to adopt Missouri's orphans. And with all due respect to the senator from Andrew, I'd have a very high cap. Because if we met that cap, we'd save this state tens of millions of dollars. And not just to have you think that I'm just a finance guy, it would change lives of children, it would change lives of parents. So, Senator, I'm just, on some level, I'm personally affronted by the fact that we're incenting our citizens to adopt a child based on that child's race.
But that also, as I said earlier, becomes a factor in those kids that are more difficult to adopt, which provide then different circumstances for those that happen to be of the majority community.
I hope that the difficult nature, the decision to adopt a child or thinking that a child is hard to place, in my mind, it's not a function of their race. It's a function of their circumstances. Do they have a history of drug abuse, physically abused?
Right.
You know, things that would fit into the special needs tax credit. You know, my goal is to increase the incidence of adoption. And I just think that we as a state right now, we tell orphans that based on the race of the color of your skin, we are going to incent potential parents to not choose you.
Right. But as we go back, I think it's just a part of human reality, whether it's intentional or unintentional. And it doesn't just have to be race. It could be some concerns with cultural differences and some of those other things that tend to come with race or ethnic background. So...
I'm sorry, Senator, you're saying that it's merely based
because folks don't want to base back kids. It could be based on several other things that happen to be rolled into one. It appears race when there may be some other issues at hand as well that contribute.
Senator, I'm looking forward to the day when we see people for they are and for the content of their character, not the color of their skin.
I agree.
And we've created a mechanism where we're separating orphans by the color of their skin. So that may seem like, I'm very much taken aback by that reality. I think that we need to make steps to show the world that when we make decisions, it's not based on the color of the skin, it's based on the circumstance that lies before us. So that's what I'm trying to do, and tomorrow, I think, or the next day, depending on how we do tonight, we're going to talk about other things we can do to speed the process to the extent that you and I, or anyone else in this body, would like to work together. I can make a very strong economic case to have a tax credit program to incent adoption, regardless of race, regardless of disability. Because you know, the majority of kids at Division of Family Services, they're not sibling groups, they're not mentally disabled, they're not physically disabled, they're just orphans.
I agree.
And we don't have enough parents. And so, again, the idea here is to say to those orphans, it doesn't matter the color of your skin. These parents are coming. They're going to pick you. Hopefully, they pick all of you. But if away from this, you want to go and work on another program, you and I together can make a very strong economic case for why we should be incenting as many parents as possible.
Well, with the concerns clearly that I've expressed in the amendment, I clearly would hope the body would vote no on the amendment. You know, I agree that there should be some incentive for folks to be able to adopt kids of all races. But I do understand also the sensitivity and the reason for which, the incentive was originally. Senator, thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from the 10th District.
I have the Senator from the 9th, please.
Senator from the 9th, do you yield? She does proceed.
Senator, I share your concerns. Thank you for the inquiry. I share your concerns. I wanted to just bring up one issue that is almost a little bit outside of the discussion you just had, and make it clear that folks understand that right now we have, I think, close to 10,000 kids in the state of Missouri that need to be adopted out of the system. And I think that the senator from the 24th and you both expressed that you would love to see the opportunity to push forth some sort of tax credit moving forward to incent people to adopt those kids. Because the reality is that this tax credit that we're talking about isn't used to adopt kids out of the children's division, out of the foster care system in the state of Missouri. And the reason that is right now we have a subsidy system, a federal subsidy system, that allows for the majority, if not all, of the costs to adopt a child out of the children's division foster care systems, to adopt a kid out of state custody. You virtually have to pay no expenses out of your own pocket because of the subsidy system that we have. And so you have folks who right now are adopting kids out of the system, and they're getting their legal fees reimbursed and many of their other fees reimbursed through the subsidy system that we already have. The problem is that we are not doing anything additional to incent people to adopt those kids. We're making it kind of a wash as far as their initial out-of-pocket expenses are concerned. And then it's actually a money loser when you get to the point where you start talking about how much you have to spend with health care and education and therapy and all of those things that are incredibly important. And so one thing that I would like to say, that part of this conversation is moot in the sense that if you're focusing strictly on getting kids out of the foster care system and into private homes, we've got to come up with a whole new incentive system. Because right now we're not incentivizing people to adopt kids out of the Missouri foster care system. That being said, I completely understand where you're coming from, and I'm not even sure that this conversation needs to be had as part of tonight's debate. And because it has raised so many red flags with you and so many of my other colleagues, I would encourage folks to consider whether or not this amendment should even be part of this discussion and whether we should move this discussion to another day. But I wanted to make sure that you know that part of our problem with all of the kids that are in the foster care system is not this tax credit, which is actually not heavily used. Part of the problem is that there's no real incentive beyond the goodness of people's hearts to get these kids out of the foster care system to begin with. So I just kind of wanted to
thank you.
Let you know that as far, and we need to do something, I think, on the incentives for adopting kids out of the foster care system, that it goes above and beyond everything we're talking about here tonight, because this is primarily private adoptions that we're talking about here tonight.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Senator.
Further discussion? Senator from the 31st, what purpose do you rise?
I beg your forgiveness, Mr. President. I want to speak later when we get back to the base bill. Excuse me.
Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator from the 4th, you're recognized to close. The Senator from the 4th District has renewed his motion that Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate Amendment Number 2 to Senate Bills 2015 and 19 be adopted. As many are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. That amendment has been adopted. Senator from the 24th.
Move for the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 2 as amended to Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 20.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from the 24th. Does any senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from the 30th.
I'd like to inquire of the Senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, I know you and I had an opportunity to visit briefly out of the chamber about this. I am concerned that this might open up some new issues which we haven't fully vetted through the chamber in the process. But I say that I really should have first said I very much respect the principles that you brought before us this evening. And we had a brief opportunity to visit, but the spirit of the inquiry that I had with the senator from the 10th earlier on her amendment, has this language been heard? I believe you have another bill. Has it been heard thoroughly and vetted through a committee?
We heard this bill in committee, and there it sits. And I chair the committee. So the intention was, after having heard it in committee, and the issues that people had with the bill had nothing to do with this issue of race. It had to do with the lobbyists for the other tax credit programs and the shifting of funds. So that's where it sits.
Okay, and there has not been a vote on this in the committee?
I have not asked for a vote, no.
I am not aware of whether there was any mention, perhaps you might be, of this type of proposal from the Tax Credit Review Commission. I don't know if they even touched these tax credits.
That has not occurred, no.
Okay.
So what we are doing is we're reauthorizing, you're reorganizing this credit, so this is the opportunity for us to take up and get this law right. And I think actually the senator from the 10th did me service by explaining to the senator from the 9th in a little bit more detail the fact that the utilization of this credit in the example that the attention that you think that the role that this credit would play is hardly ever utilized. And the fact of the matter is that where race more often comes into play is in international adoptions. And that's where utilization of the credit occurs more often. So that helps to better, kind of frame that decision. I have issue with the consideration of race, as I mentioned before. I think that the Senate from the 9th, when you were to, I think if you let this go out this way and more people actually look at the incidents, the times by which this credit is used to do what the senator from the 9th would like the credit to do, you'll find it to be almost non-existent. And that the senator from the 10th Amendment to only allow the credit to occur when the child comes from the state of Missouri, that'll actually have the biggest impact on the credit's usage. So I don't, Senator, your concerns, I understand you are concerned. I think that you will find that it won't be a concern once it's fully understood where this credit is being utilized and when and where and how often it's being utilized.
Well, as kind of going back to the discussion that we'd had earlier, my real concern is making sure that we don't entangle the underlying issue.
Understand.
Renewing these essential benevolent tax credits in another issue that could become quite larger and perhaps more divisive than the importance of these credits and what these benevolent agencies are able to do that save the taxpayer so much money.
Mr. President, this Senate might be one of those moments
for the 24th.
I might ask the Senate to stand at ease briefly, such that the senator and I can just confer privately and then come back.
Are you seeking unanimous consent to stand at ease?
I am.
Senator from the 24th is seeking unanimous consent to stand at ease. Seeing no objection, the Senate shall stand at ease. Senator from the 24th.
I believe the senator from the 30th has the floor prior to me.
Senator from Green, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. President. If I may continue my inquiry.
Senator from the 24th, you yield? He does. Proceed.
Okay. I forget where we left off for the benefit of those that might be listening outside the chamber, but we were talking about your amendment and my concerns about entanglements this year.
Yep.
And would you mind to recap for everyone kind of what we've learned from the senator from the 10th on the impact of the private adoptions and those sorts of
right.
things?
Right. What the senator from the 10th did a wonderful job of articulating to all of us and then now privately to some of our members is the fact that this credit is mostly used in private adoption settings. It doesn't accomplish the goal of the senator from the 9th, which would be to incent others to adopt children from the Division of Family Services based on their race. And I think the concerns maybe were addressed there. I can't speak, specifically the senator from the 9th, but I think that's where we are. And so you and I discussed the idea of, and I just assume vote the amendment, and if this ends up being an issue along the way, that I'll amend to the amendment to take it off. I want this to pass. I want this to pass soon. Appreciate you handling the bill. It's an opportunity to fix this. It can save my committee time and this floor time of trying to do the same thing in some other bill.
Well, and I appreciate where you're coming from on it, and as I said, I respect your statement of principle, and I don't disagree with that one bit. If you would commit to, because it's something that hasn't
right.
been voted on by a committee or this body, and we don't know what might happen on the other end, and I really don't want to get it entangled, but if you would commit to removing it, if there was some sort of a roadblock down the way, then I won't.
And you have that commitment.
I will not oppose your amendment.
Right.
Thank you.
Further discussion.
President.
Senator from the 24th.
My motion to accept the amendment as amended.
Senator from the 24th has renewed his motion for Senate Amendment Number 2 as amended to Senate Bill 2015 and 19. All those in the opinion that motion shall prevail signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senate Amendment Number 2 as amendment has been adopted. Senator from Mercer, send your amendment forward. Seeing no objection, the reading shall be waived. Senator, would you like to explain your amendment?
As to the discussion we had prior to listening to the spend every dollar we have speech that just occurred, I've taken the caps that of the programs that are in this bill. We went back and we looked at the last two fiscal years, how much money was spent in each of those programs, and we set new caps, hard caps on those programs at somewhere between 120 and 125% of what they spent. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get the body to the point of where we don't let just caps with literally millions of dollars set out there. We try to bring the caps into meaningful levels. What my opinion is that a 20% increase or a 25% increase, it'll be a few years before any of them actually have to come back and make their case. But I do believe that is a very legitimate function of good government, is when those who are spending our money actually have to come and argue the case to all of us as to why this should continue. There were three programs that would need to be changed in order to do this. The first one is the food pantry. In fiscal year 2011, which was the last time the food pantry credit was there, they spent $1 million. This institutes a new cap at $1.25 million, which is down from the $2 million cap that is in place today. The public safety officers last year was $22,000 is what we spent on that credit. This institutes a cap of $50,000 in that program. And the final one is the child in crisis. Last year they spent $629,000, which I believe is the largest ever spent within that program. This sets a cap at $750,000, which is approximately a little more than 20% above what they spent last year. Again, I'm trying to start a process by which we understand that we need to have meaningful caps. And with that, Mr. President, I renew my motion.
The senator from Mercer has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 3. Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 10th District. For what purpose do you rise?
May I inquire of the senator from Andrew?
Senator from Andrew, do you yield? He does. Proceed.
Senator, what's the total savings in the cap reduction that you just...
My guess, when it's all said and done, probably in the $2 million range.
Okay, because you knocked...
with the largest majority of that coming out of the food pantry.
$250,000 off the Children in Crisis.
Right.
Half or a quarter of a million off of the food pantry? Or was it more than that?
No, about $750,000.
Okay.
Off of the food pantry.
And then on
then a few thousand dollars, like $25,000 approximately off the public safety. There are a couple other credits in this bill that the current caps that are in place today are somewhere between 18% and 25% above what they spent in the last couple of years. So I just left them where they were.
And you realize that a little bit earlier we adopted an amendment that actually wiped out one of the credits altogether.
You did good work.
That was a $1 million savings. So what I'm throwing out here, just for conversation, is would you be willing to kind of split the difference and maybe put another $1 million back into that Children in Crisis tax credit?
Here's my reason that I believe that we should have these caps. First of all, if the Children in Crisis credit starts being used, which it very well may be used more, that now they have their quote own credit, it's very clear out there. As that happens, I mean, the advocates can come back to this body and make their case. And I believe that considering the size of the credit, that's a determination. I mean, let's be honest, it's a fairly small credit in the grand scheme of what we're dealing with. But this process of putting reasonable and meaningful caps in place is one that we need to start with. And part of what I'm hopeful of here is by doing it in these credits, which we all believe in and we all support, we are setting a precedent that all credits need to have reasonable and meaningful caps. And that's why I'm trying to get to where we are here, Senator. We all have been in this process long enough to know that this $2 million isn't going to make us or break us. But what it does set the tone of is if we're willing to put meaningful caps in place here, then good Lord, I sure hope we're willing to put meaningful caps into the big programs.
Well, you're right. It's not going to make or break, Senator, us as a state of Missouri. But some of these groups, like the Child Protection Center in Kansas City and CASA and others, it could make or break them. Because, you know, right or wrong, the state has made the policy decision that we're going to spend less GR on those programs. We're going to spend less money supporting those types of programs. And that's the decision that this state has made. But because of that, the private sector has been asked to kind of step up.
Sure.
And this is one way to leverage those dollars. And so I understand the importance, and I'm with you on not just meaningful, but I mean real, firm caps on all of those others. But I think part of the reason we broke out the benevolent tax credits is because we felt they were a little bit different. Why pick on these things that are actually encouraging the private sector to make donations as opposed to picking on really the big issue, which are those low-income housing tax credits and the ones that are the huge price tags. So I guess my concern is that we all agree with you tonight, and then we move forward into the next conversation and everyone kind of forgets, because I suspect there's going to be a whole lot more lobbyists knocking on the doors about the low-income housing tax credit than there are about the Children in Crisis tax credit.
No, Senator, you're absolutely right, and I'm not kidding myself that these credits are credits that real people use that help people that are, for lack of a better term, down on their luck versus some of those others that, as we have talked about in the past, unfortunately are often abused. They've become, as the governor referenced, very large in scale. But the reality is, once again, I believe that what tax credits are, not that I believe, I know what tax credits are, they're off-the-book spending. And I think any agency, any advocate, anyone that gets an appropriation in the budget they would love to come before the appropriations chair, and he sets this, and he starts the conversation by saying, okay, this year we're going to set your cap at 125% of what you got last year. I mean, my point is that because they're credits versus the appropriations process, there's a certain level of guarantee that already happens. And if I was setting these caps 25% below what they spent last year, you know what? That'd be a different discussion. But it's not. What we're really doing here is saying, hey, we're willing to spend another 25% on top of what we already spent last year, and that's where we're willing to start. I think that's pretty generous. I mean, I can tell you this, the Parents as Teachers program in Savannah, Missouri, they'd love to have 125% of what they got last year. I mean, as you and I know, the last few years have been tough budgets, and unfortunately, we've not been able to get the other end of the building to see our enlightened view on the need for tax credit reform. But I think that as we go through this process, this is an important step. And I mean, the reason I think it's so important, Senator, in very plain terms, is it is my belief that in order to get to a conclusion on tax credit reform, we are going to forego sunsets. And the discussion we have always had in this building is if we forgo sunsets on credits, we lower the caps. Now, in all fairness, the folks in this bill, they've taken both. They've taken sunsets because they believe in their ability to come back up here in the next 6 years and articulate why they need these credits. And I believe that setting a cap at 125% or 120% of what they got last year, that's very reasonable and it's very fair. And in all honesty and for the body's knowledge, I mean, I will let the will of the body prevail. If the Senate says, nope, we want to spend $1 million, then I might disagree with it, but I respect it, and we've at least had that discussion. And so that's why I put forward the amendment. And, Senator, while we both share the belief in the need for tax credit reform, I believe that we should begin instituting meaningful caps in every program, regardless of how small it may be.
Well, Senator, I thank you for the inquiry, and I know the answer to this question already, but I'm assuming that when we do get to the next discussion in the same round of, about the next round of discussion about tax credits, that you'll be just as passionate and eloquent about your desire to rein in those other tax credits, which frankly are the ones that are breaking the bank.
Yes, Senator. I will be probably more passionate about bringing reform there. I mean, I started this tax credit, the discussion in 2007. Honestly, I never imagined that we'd be here in 2013, still talking about the need for tax credit reform. But it is what it is, and we are where we are. And at some point, we as a body have to make a decision. Are we going to continue to let this off-the-book spending strain what I believe to be fundamental responsibilities, or are we going to get this under control so the appropriations process can work its course?
Thank you, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from the 10th.
I'd like to speak against the amendment.
Proceed.
Mr. President, I understand the need to rein in tax credits. There's absolutely no question about that, and I agree with the Senator from Andrew that the time is now. Actually, the time was 5 years ago, and we need to get it done. The problem that I have with this specific amendment is that these tax credits are helping some of our most vulnerable citizens. I'm speaking specifically about the Children in Crisis tax credit. For those of you who are not familiar with that tax credit, it goes to groups like CASA and Child Protective Services. CPC in Kansas City is the first line of people that interview little kids when they've been violently sexually abused. They're the ones who sit down with the 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5-year-olds and listen to these horrific stories. And then they work hand in hand with the prosecutors and with the other victim advocates and with all of the folks in the state who make sure that we punish those people who do these crimes and that we get the help to those kids who have been so violently assaulted. So it is my belief that if we as a state are going to have a policy that we're going to reduce the amount of money that we give to organizations like CPC and like CASA, then we need to do everything in our power to incent the private sector to make donations to those organizations. I understand that these are tough times, and I understand that we can't just open up our pocketbooks and give unlimited amounts of cash to these groups and other important groups. But if we have in our ability the opportunity to get the private sector to make donations to these organizations, to pick up where we as government cannot or will not provide the services, then we need to do that. And when we talk about reining in tax credits and caps, we need to be talking about tax credits for developers and tax credits for folks who aren't dealing with the most vulnerable people in our society. So my ask to this body is that you reject this amendment, that it not be seen as a sign of our inability to put caps on tax credits, but it be seen as our interest in making sure that the nonprofits in this state who are doing this work have every tool that they need so that they can get the money that they need to provide these services to these people. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion. Senator from the 24th District.
Andrew.
Senator from Andrew, do you yield? He does. Proceed.
Senator, I appreciate your amendment. I think your point that you're making is well made, that you're setting caps that these agencies have not reached. And I think the senator from the 10th, I appreciate very much her comments just now. And she also reminded you of the fact that in the previous discussion about the special needs adoption tax credit, we saved at least $1 million. And I think at the end of the day, we're going to save two more. What you're trying to do is you're holding this group accountable. I'll just share with the freshman members my perspective. The last 2 years, we came down here fighting to save benevolent tax credits. They were being held hostage in part of this bigger debate. So the last thing that ever crossed my mind was to consider what the Senator Knipe and I talked about today, which is finding a new incentive program in the social arena. So what if your amendment were to go on, and you're booking these savings, I think that it would give people like myself the opportunity to go back and look at other places in this arena to maybe bring forward a new idea, a new incentive program that does as much good and the same kind of good all these other benevolent tax credits do, and that I would hope you'd stay open-minded to that idea, recognize the fact that you've essentially, in your mind, book savings, but maybe there's a better use inside the benevolent arena. So I appreciate the inquiry. I just wanted to ask you to, if you remember to go on, to keep that open mind when I come back to you with some other good ideas.
Actually, Senator, I know it's your inquiry, but I actually think that you raise a valid point. And that point is part of what we need to do as we have this whole tax credit discussion is we as a body have to decide how those resources are going to be reallocated, just into budget savings, into the elimination or reduction of taxes, or as to your point in this discussion, you know, can we find some dollars to do some of the things the Senator?
Yeah, I hadn't even occurred to me the last 2 years to try to find a program like some of these benevolent programs to go support, file legislation, convince you all that's a good idea. It hasn't even crossed my mind because we were fighting to keep these credits that we have here today in place. So to the extent you're trying to rein them in and may have them be fiscally responsible, in my mind, I'm incented now to think that maybe I can go find other good ideas. Maybe the idea that the Senator from Ninth and I briefly talked about today, and when I bring those ideas back to you, I'd ask you to keep an open mind about the savings you're going tonight. So thank you for the inquiry, Senator.
Absolutely.
Further discussion. Senator from St. Louis City's 4th District, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, if I could get four senators to stand with me, I'd like to request a roll call vote.
You have the required number of senators standing. A roll call vote shall be granted. Further discussion. Senator from Buchanan, for what purpose do you rise?
Inquire of the senator from Andrew.
Senator from Mercer, do you yield? He does. Proceed.
You know, I really do have a serious inquiry, but before we begin, have you noticed that the senator from the 11th isn't even blocked in if we inquire of each other.
Way.
In fact, we don't. When we inquire of each other, we don't block anybody in.
the reason to not inquire of each other.
Except for the senator from the 8th when he breaks the rules and
cuts in front of your desk like you did earlier.
Yeah, we would bug him. The thing about your amendment, Senator, is it really doesn't save anything, does it?
Like $2 million. No, that's right, because it's actually unused cap space.
Right.
That's right.
So technically, we might have future savings if somebody wanted to
if the growth in the programs continued.
Yeah. But right. Just
that's right. As in a practical implementation, it by putting these caps on, we are not actually implementing any budget savings because all these caps are above what they have historically been spending.
That's the only point I wanted to make. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion. Senator from the 10th District. For what purpose do you rise?
The senator from Green, please.
Senator from Green, do you yield? He does. Proceed.
Senator, I just wanted to make sure I understand one thing before I give up on this. Right now, the Children in Crisis Tax Credit has been utilized at the level of about $629,000 a year because that was what was left and swept from an unused fund or an unused cap. Is that correct?
That is correct, from the resident special needs adoption program pool.
Okay. So the
unused credit.
We don't know yet what the utilization would be of that tax credit because it's never had a standalone tax credit. They've only been allowed to use what's left over from another tax credit. Is that correct?
That is correct. The unused portion. And as I mentioned earlier, the non-resident special needs adoption, those were in a separate pool. They did not flow into that leftover pool that the agencies, those three agencies that you mentioned earlier around the state, are able to apply for.
Okay. Well, then I think in the spirit of compromise, I would like an amendment to the amendment drafted, which leaves the cap in there for the public safety surviving spouses, leaves in the cap that was suggested from the Senator for Andrew of the food pantry, but that takes the Children in Crisis up to $1 million, and here's why, and I'm not sure that he heard us saying this. The Children in Crisis has never had a standalone tax credit, so we absolutely have no idea to what level it would have been utilized. So far, they've only been able to utilize it to the extent that there was cap left over from the resident tax credit or resident adoption tax credit, and it's my understanding that last year, resident adoptions used about $429,000 of their cap, which meant that's about what we had left over. Is that correct?
I think that's right.
So, I mean, I think it's I understand what the senator from Andrew is trying to do. I think it's fair to say that they should be able to have a cap that is in excess of what they utilized. What I think is unfair about this is that this credit has never had a chance to let us see what they would do if they had $1 million cap, because they've only been given leftovers. So I would propose that we keep everything exactly as the senator from Andrew said, but that we allow the Children in Crisis to go up to $1 million as a standalone. And then when we reevaluate in 6 years or whenever it is, and they've only been using it at 750, then we take it down to 750. But I think it's unfair to rely on past performance when their past performance has been based on what's left over from another credit.
Well, Senator, I do agree with your comments about the proposed Champion for Children or Children in Crisis Tax Credit. I was intending to have a discussion with the senator from Andrew about the surviving spouse credit and the other one that he's doing here or changing, offering the amendment for.
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't I end my inquiry so you can inquire of the senator from Andrew, but I'm going to move forward with my amendment to amendment idea because I'd just like to get an up or down vote on whether or not we should give this tax credit a chance before we give it a cap based on data that is not, I think, going to be indicative of future use.
Yep.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. President.
Senator from Green.
I'd like to inquire of the senator from Andrew.
Senator from Andrew, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. Okay, let me just have you go through these three again and
yep.
the The first one is the surviving spouse, and you're proposing a tech or a cap on that of $50,000?
Yeah, right now they're spending $22,000 is what they spent this year, and so I put a cap on, because today it has no cap, I put a cap on $50,000.
And what's the trend line on that tax credit?
I assume like every tax credit it trends up.
I don't have...
I think it's only been in existence for a year or two. We just passed it the last... It was two sessions.
I don't have any information here at my desk on that particular tax credit. I would say this on benevolent tax credits. I believe that what we do with these incentives is we encourage private investors to choose those agencies in their communities, whether it's the Children in Crisis or the other ones, to donate to based on what they as taxpayers see and citizens see as an effective and efficient agency. The more we involve government in that process, I believe we involve more problems. And my specific concern with the amendment, the first one with the surviving spouse, is a little bit different. And I have to tell you that I just after thinking about this a little bit more, I'm going to have to oppose the amendment, but I wanted to kind of explain why. The surviving spouse of a public safety officer, the dollar amount that was redeemed, that is, we're not talking about a quote-unquote program here. We're talking about surviving spouse of someone who was out there protecting us in the line of duty.
It's still a program. We're still spending money. We're spending money for a good reason, a reason that we as a body said we're going to spend it, but it is a program. It didn't exist 3 years ago.
All I'm saying is if we place an arbitrary cap on that program, which it does not have a cap right now, correct?
Correct.
If we place a cap on that program, I want to be clear what we're doing. I would not want to put us in a position where, if that's going to be the public policy, that we're going to have this tax credit for a surviving spouse, there really is no way of knowing how many people are going to be in that unfortunate situation and apply for the credit. And I would not want to be, I don't think any of us would want to be the person that has to say, no, you hit the cap, your life or the life of your spouse is worth less than someone else. That's my only philosophical thought with that.
And I don't know all the details on how the credit is implemented, and we need someone from the department or whoever implements that to clarify, but my sense is that my hope is that we're not going to, you know, you wouldn't close that entire gap in 1 year. And that what would happen is, in the unfortunate situation that credit continues to be used more, which means more individuals are falling in the line of duty, that at some point, those who administer that credit see that trend coming, know where we're going, and have the foresight to come to us and say, hey, listen, we're going to need another $25,000 or another $50,000 or whatever the dollar amount is. So if you don't like 50, that's okay, pick a better number. But the fact that we stand on this floor and think that we shouldn't have caps on government spending, regardless of the program, I just philosophically disagree with. So I'm with you on, I don't want to be the person that says, sorry, ma'am, you hit the cap, got it. But, Senator, with all due respect, the speech I just heard was spend all the state money, spend all the federal money, borrow more money, and spend it too. At some point...
I think we heard the same speech.
At some point, sanity has to kick in. And my argument is not that this is a bad credit. I'm not saying that.
No, I didn't hear
what
you
I am
say
saying
that.
Is that legitimate caps, I think, are a responsible step in government. And so if that's not the right cap, then I'm interested and willing to work with you or whoever to figure out what it is. I'm just very, very gun shy of ever leaving anything unlimited, because that's what happened to us, you know, 15 years ago, and now we're trying to work our way through that.
And when this was proposed 3 years ago, I was not in the Senate. I remember voting on it in the House. Do you recall if there were any amendments to put a cap on this at that time?
Yeah, I actually thought the program had a cap on it. I thought it had a cap of like $100,000 or something like that, but when we went through it, it didn't. So I was actually shocked that it didn't have one.
Well, I wonder if it was a matter of public policy, since it was the kind of credit that we're dealing with, because it's not like another program where it would continue to grow as the word of this program spread. People are either falling in the line of duty or they're not.
That's right.
They either have a spouse or they don't. Let me move to the next one. If I'm not mistaken, you're only addressing three in here, right?
Right. Those okay. three are the only ones that had cap space.
Okay. With the Children in Crisis Tax Credit, I don't disagree that we need to have some sort of a cap there, because it is theoretically a new program, because yep. we're moving it out from under the Special Needs Adoption Credit. When that credit was proposed, as I mentioned in my opening remarks, it was intended to not be any additional exposure. Let's call it exposure rather right. than spending, because we're not spending a dime unless a tax credit is redeemed.
Right.
But we are exposing ourselves to additional liability down
yep,
the road
absolutely.
From general revenue. So the intention was not to increase the amount of exposure to the state, so it was simply taking those unused credits and repurposing them. But what we've done tonight on this floor with the amendment from the Senator from the 10th is we've eliminated that non-resident
right.
special needs adoption, which I totally agree with the philosophy there. We should be incentivizing adoptions of special needs kids here in Missouri, our residents.
And Senator, I mean, I think the dialogue that I listened to between you and the Senator from the 10th, a brief discussion that I had with the Senator from Butler, the Senator from the 24th, I think I think the Senator from the 10th raises a valid point. And so when she offers her Grow Government amendment, I'm gonna take that amendment. Let's see what happens now that the credit is a standalone credit. I think that's a reasonable request, and we'll have better real-world data, for lack of a better term, within the next couple of years. So I assume they're still drafting, or someone is working on her amendment.
It may be. When I started out this evening, I was really hoping that we could keep the bill clean, and in the spirit of compromise to both the Senator from the 10th and the Senator from the 24th, I see the merits of those. Amendments, but I really have some concerns with I realize that we're trying to limit exposure.
Yep.
Let me ask you a question.
Senator, if you want to raise the cap, if you feel more comfortable at $100,000 or something like that, I'm okay. I mean, I'm trying to establish the precedent that we as a body understand we have to limit our liabilities, and this program isn't going to be one that is going to break us, but we got a couple coming later that are breaking us, and we've got to be willing to stand up and say, wait a minute, if I could put a $100,000 cap or a $50,000 cap or pick the number on the spousal benefits of those who fall in the line of duty, guess what, low-income developers, you're getting a meaningful cap. That's my point, Senator.
Well, and I don't disagree with you one bit that those are the ones that are really causing us to have tremendous exposure out there and that eat up general revenue, and from the priorities that we really need to be focusing on, things like education and whatnot. Let me ask you a question, and this maybe comes down to a philosophical thought on it. You, in your opening remarks, you talked about holding those accountable that are spending our money. I know there's been debate on this floor for several years about tax credits. There's been those who would like to see everything go through appropriations. there are those that would like to see tax credits, all of the tax credits, eliminated. Do you view the cap process as sort of a kind of a quasi appropriation? In other words, them coming to through the appropriations process.
Clearly, when this body debates caps and sets the cap, that we are preemptively spending money. We are making a statement up front that says this is going to be what we're going to appropriate to you in a given year. And the reason that is because with tax credits get their money before anything else, before we pay public debt, before we fund education, before we do anything else. So, yes, this debate that we're having right now and whatever these caps end up being set at, that is a public policy debate, just like we have a public policy debate in the appropriations process. So,
and what happens when, let's take the Children in Crisis tax credit, for example, what happens when that cap is maxed out, yet we all know that the needs that these nonprofit agencies are, and quite frankly, fulfilling and meeting more efficiently than government.
Right.
What then happens with those remaining needs?
When they hit their cap, you're saying? Just like anyone else, Senator, they come up here and they meet with 34 people and they convince a majority of the members in this body that, hey, you know what? $1 million is no longer getting it done, and we're going to have $1.5 million.
I don't disagree with you in that very literal interpretation of what happens next, but I'm asking you what happens with those needs, the immediate needs, before we take action?
Senator, we're never going to meet all the needs in this state. It's never going to happen.
I agree.
And all that we can do is manage this process the best we can. But if our answer to how we're going to fix the needs of this of our state and our country are unlimited bank accounts
coming out
of state treasury, we're done.
I'm not advocating that whatsoever. I believe in fiscal responsibility, and that's why I'm asking this question. What happens with the folks that you're familiar with what the Children in Crisis tax credit does? I don't know if there's a crisis nursery in your district. I know there are several across the state.
Right.
They take the donations and they leverage those donations with the tax credit. And what they do is they keep kids out of foster care. That is a liability that we don't necessarily just get to choose whether or not we're going to appropriate it. That's an immediate function of a department action that has to be taken. That kid goes right into custody. If they can't intervene and those crisis nurseries cannot prevent a child from going into foster care, that's an immediate expense. And I would argue that it is a greater expense because that state agency is never, with all due respect to our wonderful state workers, they are never going to be able to do what these private agencies do, and they will never be as efficient. So I'm also speaking from a point of fiscal responsibility. I think we would be far, far, far down the road if instead of saying, well, we're going to rely on the agencies of state government and we're going to rely on politicians in a committee to do an appropriation, to set as a matter of public policy an incentive, as we have done with these credits, to say agencies, go out and partner with private investors, with donors who will hold you accountable because they're watching you in your own community, and do a better job than government does. That is why my philosophy is such that I've supported these benevolent tax credits, because to me it really is the fiscally responsible thing to do. It is an ounce of prevention,